This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It's our Health and Living segment. And today we're going to be discussing cosmetic surgeries that have gone wrong. Now, in October, we all read the sad news of the passing of a very young woman after she underwent a cosmetic procedure at an unlicensed center. But this is not an isolated case, because every year we hear stories of cosmetic or plastic surgeries that have gone wrong, especially when carried out in an unlicensed clinic. So these incidences not only have physical consequences for the individual, but it's also got a psychological consequence. Joining me today, Dr. Somasundaram Sathapan. He's back once again. We're going to be discussing about the dangers of such procedures and how they can be avoided. Welcome to the show, Dr. Soma. How are you today?
Very well, and thanks for having me back.
You are most welcome. I mean, I think this is a timely show. I mean, it's a little late compared to, I mean, this happened a couple of weeks ago, but once in a while, we do come up, we do read these reports about cosmetic surgeries and procedures gone wrong. But how common is it in Malaysia?
Of course, there are no statistics available, because the whole industry is an underground industry. So nobody knows exactly how many patients or people go to these centers and get surgery and procedures done, and how many of them actually turn out to have complications. All I can say is that I see 1 to 2 patients every week in my clinic with complications done at these centers.
Well, that's quite a that's quite a lot, given that, you know, you're just one person.
I'm just one person. So, and my colleagues in our association, all of us see such patients regularly all over the country. It's not just Klang Valley alone.
So a lot of it is everywhere. It's not really reported as such.
I think most of it is not reported.
Okay.
You're only seeing the disasters, the complications and the ones that affect the people, but it doesn't take their life, that you don't hear about.
Okay. But do you think it's a case of enforcement, or is it a case of the lack of laws in place?
I think it's multifactorial, in the sense that, first of all, the people shouldn't go to beauticians or to unlicensed doctors for these procedures. They should know what to go for. To who to approach when they want somebody to cut up their skin. The Medical Act specifies very clearly that only doctors, nurses and medical assistants can even give injections. No one else is allowed to touch you with a needle. If they do that, it's considered as assault. You know, so it's quite clear. So to allow a beautician or an unlicensed doctor, overseas doctor, to come and touch you, give you local anesthetic and cut you up is actually illegal. Problem is, no one knows it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's the issue. But the laws are there. Enforcement is a different issue as well. What the mind does not know, the eye does not see. So if there's no complaints to the Ministry of Health or to the police, unfortunately, no investigation can be done. There's just too many centres for the authorities to go and audit on a regular basis.
Okay. So so then it lies with us then, this responsibility. And it is all up to us,
yes,
to look after ourselves, right? Why do you think people do go to unlicensed places to carry out these procedures? I mean, we read it all the time. We all know. But why do we keep doing it?
I think, first of all, most people are very comfortable going to their regular beauticians. And then when they go for the regular treatments and then they want something extra, the beautician then suggests a surgical treatment. And that's where the problem lies. You see, the beautician is not qualified to suggest that treatment in the first place. Patient may need something else altogether. But then when they suggest it, instead of suggesting them to refer them to a doctor to get it properly treated, that means to see a licensed doctor, they then tend to do it themselves. And not all, please. I think it's only a certain number. And unfortunately, that's when complications come about.
Okay, so comfort level is one.
Yes.
Second, what about cost?
Oh, it's far cheaper, I think, definitely. Like the lady who came to me 2 weeks ago after having had liposuction, 2 months ago, after having had tummy liposuction done under local anesthetic in a beauty center, which was excruciatingly painful. And she told me she just got up after 15 minutes and walked off. She couldn't stand the pain. And she developed an infection 3 days later, and there was pus pouring out of her tummy. And she came to my clinic after that, after Googling for plastic surgeons nearby, found my name, and then she came. So this should have, the research should have been done before the procedure, not after. But the cost of the whole procedure that she paid in that beauty center was only 4,000 ringgit.
Right.
Yeah.
So that is a big attraction as well.
Yes, it's so much cheaper than having it done in a major hospital with anesthesia, where you're under general anesthesia, completely comfortable, pain-free, and you wake up well with a good result.
So are you saying that, you know, beauticians are administering anesthesia as well? Or do they have anesthetists present when they do these procedures?
The answer to that question is, I really don't know. But we presume from the mishaps that have been happening that they are administering the local anesthetic themselves.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Okay. That is
scary.
Very scary. Because
that's scary because they have no idea of dosage, how many milligrams per kg they're supposed to give, where they're supposed to give. Are they injecting into the fat, muscle, vein? No idea.
Would you dare do it?
I give local anesthetic regularly in my clinic, but I'm trained to do that. So we are alert on the dose, how much to give, where to give it, and if there are any complications, what to look out for during the procedure.
Okay, let's talk about the recent case where a very young lady, 23-year-old, decided to do liposuction on her arms and she passed on.
Yes. Right,
very soon after they administered the anesthesia, you know, her heart rate plummeted and she passed on. What went wrong there?
Most probably, the local anesthetic was given straight into the vein. And it went straight to the heart and it just froze the heart. So the heart stopped beating and that's why she passed away. And even this can happen even in a hospital setting, you know. But the thing is, we have an anesthetist looking at the heart rate on a monitor all the time. And when that happens, they've got the whole paraphernalia of equipment and drugs at their disposal to start the heart again and to resuscitate the patient. That is not available in a clinic or a beauty center.
Okay. So complications in surgery can happen is what you're saying.
Yes.
But you need to be in the right setting where, you know, there is backup.
Where it can be treated, picked up early and treated, yeah.
How common, what are some of the most common cosmetic procedures here in Malaysia?
I think the commonest procedure would be the blepharoplasty, the double eyelid procedure. So eyelid surgery is common. Next would be facelifts, liposuction, rhinoplasties, nose jobs, and tummy tucks, and breast augmentations.
Okay.
These are the commonest ones.
Double eyelid sounds so, you know, doesn't sound dangerous. How wrong can that go?
It doesn't sound dangerous, but unfortunately, it's one of the most difficult procedures to get it right because most people want their folds to be just there, perfect, symmetrical. And the eyelids are very unforgiving. Even a 1 millimeter difference between the right and left eye is very visible.
Okay.
Yeah, so there we are. It can go wrong.
Yeah, and in your eyesight, can it be affected?
On a bad day, a very, very bad day, it can. On a very, very bad day, yes. It can, but unlikely.
Okay. We're discussing cosmetic surgeries gone wrong. If you have a question, you can give us a call. It's 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Soma in the house. He's a consultant, plastic and reconstructive surgeon. You can call and ask a question or even text us. I think this is something that does resonate with many of us. And it is tempting, Dr. Soma, I will have to say. If you tell me my stomach's going to be a lot flatter for a much cheaper price, I would be very tempted to do that. Is there a way in which there is a solution to this problem?
No, in one answer. Because unfortunately, there is a cost to safety and experience. And we cannot cut short all the safety measures in a hospital just to cut costs because lives are at risk. So you cannot cut short the safety measures. And there's a cost involved. So there's a cost of anesthesia, the anesthetist, the operation theatre, the sterility, the equipment. So there's a cost to pay. And I think it's a cost that we must pay to get good results. Remember, this is cosmetic surgery, unnecessary surgery. You're doing it because you want it, not because you need it. You need cancer surgery. You need stroke surgery. You need fracture surgery. Do you need a nose job? No, you want a nose job. So the duty of the doctor to make sure that the nose job is done well, without complications, and you come out of it better than before. If there's a slightest risk, it's a disaster.
How do you think advertisements play a role in all of this?
Oh, the whole...
And you know, we've got this whole online thing going on.
Yes,
now, right?
Yes.
You can purchase stuff online. You can seek services online. You can buy products online. It's a free-for-all world.
I know, and that's not a really good thing because, unfortunately, the images that are being seen around the world of models and people who are super skinny and slim and have got the best figures, these are all just eyewash. You should see the model when she wakes up first thing in the morning without makeup.
How would you know, Dr. Soma?
Because I see them all the time. We have to wipe off the grease paint before we get to work on them. It can take some time to wipe it off.
Really?
Yes. So it really takes a lot. And unfortunately, the young people really are very gullible and they think this is an ideal to aspire to. This is the figure I want. This is the shape that I want, the face that I want. And how much money am I willing to spend? And if the plastic surgeon is so expensive, let's go to this part, which is so much more cheaper. What could go wrong? There we are.
Okay. We'll come back and talk about breast augmentation. I think that's something a lot of women also do consider. But, you know, things can go terribly wrong there. We'll come back and find out more. If you have a question, 7733 2900 to call us or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Meera Sivasudhi. In our Health and Living segment, we are discussing cosmetic surgeries gone wrong. Dr. Somasundaram Sathapan, a consultant plastic and reconstructive surgeon in the studio with us, helping us answer a lot of these questions. After an incident recently where a 23-year-old lady went for a liposuction on her arm and, you know, unfortunately after anesthesia was administered, her heart rate sort of plummeted and she passed away. So we're discussing a lot about these unlicensed centers and how you need to be a lot more cautious when deciding what to consider when you actually decide to undergo cosmetic surgery. Let's talk about breast augmentation, Dr. Soma. That's also, I'm sure you see a lot of botched surgeries in this area. You want to just explain some your experience?
Now, when it comes to breast augmentation, there's also a large proportion of ladies going to unlicensed centers for injections into their breasts, where they inject substances ranging from pure silicone to oil. I even had foam injected into the breasts and just for breast enlargement purposes. And it's very cheap. It's only, what, 2,000, 3,000 ringgit, and they get the figure that they look for. Unfortunately, these things don't last long. The body recognizes them as foreign tissue and then isolates them. Some of them get infected, pus start pouring out, and they end up with grossly deformed, scarred breasts, which may not even do the function breasts were supposed to, which means that when they actually start breastfeeding, they can't. They have lots of problems with it. So that's a common problem that all plastic surgeons all over Malaysia we see regularly. Okay. Foreign body injected into the breasts.
Okay. What is the right way of doing it? How would you approach?
A right way is actually to put an implant in, a silicone-based implant. These are all FDA approved. And you should counsel the patient before and after, saying that implants are not permanent. They may have to be changed with time. And recently, there's a specific disease called breast implant-associated acute large cell lymphoma. And about 150 patients in US have been affected. Very, very rare. And recently, I know there's one case in Malaysia as well. But there's only quite specific to certain brands of implants, not all, you know. So as long as you counsel them well and then you tell them this is the procedure, that's the procedure to go for.
Okay. How do you counsel them, Dr. Soma? I mean, what do you go through?
I tell them the fact that they've got foreign bodies in their breasts, two implants, and then it's not a lifelong implant, that they may need to be removed and replaced later. And the complications of having an implant must be clearly explained. Rupture, extrusions, thinning of the wall, contracture where it becomes hard, etc. What's the other sad part about injections to the breast is that it obscures your mammogram and ultrasound examinations, you know. So when ladies above the age of 40 go for their annual checkups, when they get the ultrasound and breast ultrasounds and mammograms, the injections totally obscure the breast. So the radiologist is unable to read anything. So if you have a cancer in the breast, it could be absolutely covered up by these injections. And you'll only know when the lump is grossly huge. By the time the boat has set sail.
Yeah.
You know, it's very sad.
I mean, I suppose as males, you probably wonder why some of these ladies actually even want to do cosmetic surgery. How do you even try and talk them out of it?
Now, my aim when I see a patient who comes for cosmetic surgery is to find out whether there is actually, I won't say defect, an unhappiness that is valid. That means if a lady comes to me for breast augmentation, I actually examine the breast and see actually they have adequate breast tissue or not. If they are really flat-chested, it's affecting their self-esteem, and they can't have a figure when they wear a figure-hugging dress, then it may be warranted, you know. I mean, there are ladies who come to me for a nose job and their nose is perfect, but they want it lifted by 1.5 millimeters. And they tell me exactly that, you know. They want it raised, the tip, by 1.5 millimeters. I tell them that's not possible. Unrealistic expectations, one. Second thing is your nose is great. You don't need anything more. So I do discourage people from having cosmetic surgery if I think it's unnecessary for them. And if I think that it'll do more harm to them in the long run.
Okay, but that could mean also that they would go on to the next doctor and try and get it done there.
My conscience is clear at the end of the day. You know, I don't want to do something where I'll end up with an unhappy patient. Everybody must be happy when they see me, full stop.
Yeah.
You know.
When, you know, and I notice a lot of people when they get married, they tend to want to do things to themselves so that they look great on their wedding day. And this is what one such case that's happened.
But most ladies want to do things after the children have left the coupon, actually.
Hmm.
Yes, because they are in their 40s, and then they don't like the way they look in front of the mirror. And then they come for a makeover. We call it a mommy makeover.
Right.
Where we tighten up the breasts and get rid of the excess flab in the tummy. And when you stand up, you have that little pouch hanging down.
Don't remind, because you're talking about me here.
So they don't like what they see in the mirror.
Yeah.
Yes, and so they want to get a redo. And that's very, very encouraging.
And you're okay with that?
That I'm okay, because they just want to get the figure that they had. And it interferes with the exercises, yoga, stuff like that, you know. So they want it to be tucked in where it's supposed to be.
Okay.
And the interesting thing is, most of the time, the husbands are very discouraging. They do not want their wives to do it, you know. And when you ask them, why don't you want your wife to do it? They're very, very good. No, it's a safety dog. I don't want anything to happen to her. She's very sweet, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay.
So I usually insist husbands come along with the interview so that, you know, they are very clear that what we're going to do and how it's done, and that they're happy with it.
Okay. So it's a woman's psychology, would you say? It's our own psyche that we need to work on.
Yes, the men always say, I'm very happy the way she is. And the wife will look at him and say, well, I'm not.
Yeah, but then you look at the next beautiful woman who's passing by. That's the problem, Dr. Sama.
That cannot be treated.
I'm glad you were very clear with that. What about men doing cosmetic surgery? Do you see many of them?
Yes, and they're quite specific. Men have three main concerns. Four, actually. Hair loss. Nose. They're not unhappy with their noses. They're not unhappy with their tummy, beer belly, occasionally. Mm-hmm. And man boobs.
Okay.
So this four is quite common.
And do you see botched surgeries amongst the men
Hardly
as well?
Hardly any, I have to say, among the men. The
really?
Men, the moment they want anything done, they come straight to the plastic surgeon because they don't go to beautician in the first place. Men don't go to beauticians. Those men, those days men. Now some of them do, mm-hmm. I have to say, but they don't. So they come to us and they usually have done their research. They have gone through the websites, read about the procedure, and then they'll come and usually they'll see a few doctors to get their opinions before they decide.
Okay. And in terms of anatomy, are there certain parts of the body that are a bit more sensitive or fragile that we should be thinking about?
Very aptly put. Some men are very unhappy with their male organ, unfortunately. And so what they do, they get themselves injected there. And what happens
is... Some men, only some, is it?
Some, yeah. Unfortunately. Sarcasm isn't going to get you anywhere.
Many are just not telling you about it, that's all.
Possible. But you see, I don't see them. Most of them go to the urologist.
Yes.
Okay, so I don't see them. I only see the botched jobs that come from they go to the BOMOs and some guy somewhere in some dingy place that's injecting their penis with all kinds of funny things. And then they go for lengthening. But unfortunately, what happens is it becomes broader at the base. And tethers, and then they have other problems like infection and all that. And then they go and see their regular doctors, and then the doctors actually refer them to me to get it out.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you do that sort of work as well?
Yes, yes. That we do maybe 5 or 6 cases a year.
Okay. Not many, hardly compared to the women.
Not many, but just me alone. So I'm sure the other plastic surgeons are seeing them as well. Yeah.
So when people come to you with butt surgeries, how do you manage the expectations?
I think first thing is to tell them that it's not the end of the world, you know. Most of them are so distraught, psychologically traumatized, financially depleted as well. So, and they're very upset with themselves for having it done. And their relatives and family are also upset with them for going to get it done, for totally unnecessary surgery. And some wives don't tell their husbands they've had it done.
Yeah.
And this causes a lot of marital discord. So we have to solve all that problems concurrently with the medical treatment.
How do you do that?
It takes a lot of patience and also time to sit down with them and their husbands and to talk it through.
Hmm.
Once the husband realizes that this is serious, that we need to get it treated, if they can't afford to get it treated privately, I'll refer them to the government facility, speak to them in the government side and try to get it done there.
Okay. What about long-term consequences? How do you manage that?
The long-term consequences are basically scarring and deformity.
Because I'm assuming they'll come to you and hope that you'll be able to fix everything and things will be back to normal, right?
I know. They want me to give them back what they had before without scarring, which is just not possible, you see. So we just have to temper their expectations. I usually show them pictures of previous patients before and after and tell them this is what you're going to look like 6 months down the line.
Okay. And there's a lot of stigma attached to people coming forward to see somebody like you to fix that butt surgery. What would be your advice?
The stigma is because I think they're very worried about the cost. I always tell them, look, it's just the cost of a consultation, 100 ringgit, that's all. After that, you get a good advice, then you decide and the doctor will be able to help you to find the right treatment, even if you can't afford the treatment at a private center. You know, it's well worth the visit, definitely.
Okay. And in terms of, I've spoken to you about regulations and the laws, it is there in place.
Yes.
However, where do unlicensed centers fall under Dr. Soma? Because I do know our Ministry of Health is very very, very stringent when it comes to enforcement of anything that's medically related. However, do they fall under the Ministry of Health?
Well, the unlicensed centres do not fall under the Ministry of Health because they are not medical centres. That's a problem, you see. So they do not have to be registered under the Private Healthcare Facilities Act. And the practitioners there who are non-doctors do not come under the Medical Act as well. So they are totally out of the orbit of the Ministry of Health. The Ministry of Health is only involved when there's a complaint made saying that a medical procedure was carried out at this place and it went wrong. Then they'll come in and then they'll do their investigations and compounds, fines, prosecution, etc. But it becomes more of a criminal case than a police case after that.
Okay.
If a doctor was involved, then it's ethical issues.
Right. Yeah. Do you think it should be placed under the Ministry of Health?
I think so. Anything to do with the human body or changes to it from the skin downwards, if it involves injection, topical treatment, it should come under the Ministry of Health. If the Ministry of Health is going to regulate this industry, they'll do a great job.
Okay. And for the time being, if we are going to carry out a procedure at a beauty salon or, you know, an unlicensed center, what do we ask for to make sure that it is a legitimate place?
I think first thing to ask for is that to make sure that there's the doctor that is working there, if there is a doctor, is registered with the Malaysian Medical Council. If he's a specialist, he has an NSR, National Specialist Register number, and that they have an LCP, Licentiate of Cosmetic Practice. Now, that's given by the Ministry of Health to every doctor in Malaysia who wants to do cosmetic procedures. It's a must. Without that, you cannot perform cosmetic procedures. There's an exam to sit for. In the LCP, there's Schedule 1, 2, and 3. And Schedule 1 is for GPs and a list of procedures they can do. Schedule 2 is for dermatologists with a list of procedures they can do. And Schedule 3 is for plastic surgeons and a list of procedures that plastic surgeons can do.
Yeah.
So it's very, very clear in the law.
But we don't know, right?
Yes.
And I'll be honest, there's so much money to be made in cosmetic surgery. You have GPs doing procedures.
Yes.
Even that can be risky.
It can, yes, of course. Definitely. But the onus is on the patient to make sure that the place they go to has got doctors who's well-versed in the procedure, who know what they're doing, and if their anesthesia is well taken care of. If there's a complication, there's adequate equipment in the center to take care of their health.
There are so many of these places, Dr. Soma. Tons.
Yes, I know.
where do we even start?
I know it's a responsibility for the government to take, you know, because I don't think as individuals we can't do much. We can only advise people who come to us. Yeah.
It is unfortunately everywhere and it's so easily available. I don't blame people for wanting to go and do this, and it frustrates me because, you know, cost-wise, accessibility, it is so easy. And if you aren't informed of a lot of these things and you don't understand it, you would do it.
You would, and a lot of it is vernacular, you know. It's in the vernacular press. The English-speaking people don't usually get into this kind of mess. The vernacular press, they are the one who actually do a lot of these advertisements online, and that is off the radar, actually. We don't really see it. And a lot of marketing is done online as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because so. I think this sense of wanting to look better and everything cuts across every race, every yes. socioeconomic group.
It's a great leveler.
It is, yeah, absolutely. So it is. Everybody is going to be wanting to look better at some point. What is your advice about looking better?
Oh, that's very simple. One has to look better from within. Charisma starts from within. If you're a happy person, you look beautiful immediately.
That's easier said than done.
If you're grumpy, you will not look good at all, even with the best makeup on.
Yes, and we have seen how procedures can go very wrong.
Yes, I do. Yes,
and still have to walk around with it. We have a lot of walking people like that walking around. So would you have a message for us?
Yes, I think it's always buyer beware. Please do your research and your homework before you go in and get a procedure. And if somebody's going to inject you or cut you with a knife, make sure he or she has got the relevant qualifications, experience, and works in a proper accredited center before you do it. Full stop. That's it.
Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dr. Somasundaram Sathapan, consultant plastic and reconstructive surgeon, speaking to us about cosmetic surgeries gone wrong on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.